Okay.
Hi. Welcome to the Health Nuts podcast with Mary Vance and Kayla Weeks. We're holistic nutritionists, and we work in San Francisco, California. You can find us on the internet at grassfedgirl.com and maryvancenc.com. And we're happy to be here and help you bring real food education to the masses.
That's right. Thanks, Caitlin. So we have some good info to share with everybody today. We're going to talk about the story that hit the news that I've gotten some questions about. There's a new study, of course, about how meat kills you. And it seems like these studies surface every once in a while. So we'll talk about that, and we have questions to answer, some really good questions this week. But first, we are going to
do the disclaimer.
Oh, that's right. Why don't you do the disclaimer, of course, to start off with.
The purpose of this podcast is to educate and to inform. There is no substitute for professional care by a doctor or qualified medical professional. This podcast is provided on understanding that it does not constitute medical or other professional advice or services. Instead, we encourage you to discuss options with your health care provider. Caitlin Weeks and Mary Vance assume no liability for any of your activities in connection with this podcast.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. Before we get started, I want to talk briefly about how enamored I am with gelatin. And I've been using the Great Lakes gelatin. I know you use it, don't you, Caitlin? You have a bunch of recipes on your website with it.
Mm-hmm.
I keep recommending it to my clients who especially have leaky gut, and also to vegetarians who are trying to transition into more protein or incorporating more animal protein in their diet. But the gelatin is really wonderful for, like I mentioned, gut health, and it contains a lot of good amino acids, and it contains really easy to digest calcium, magnesium, and other trace minerals. So it can really help people who have joint pain too, because it helps sort of provide support to your skeletal system and strong teeth, good hair, great skin. You know, there's some evidence that it fights cellulite and even prevents wrinkles. So I have several clients that struggle with autoimmune issues, anything from eczema, which we're going to talk about today. I got a lot of questions regarding eczema. So I recommend it for anyone who's doing gut healing or who's on an autoimmune protocol. And it's great for skin. And the health of your skin is so tied into the health of your digestive tract. But that Great Lakes gelatin is cool because the green one dissolves in anything, so you can kind of drink it in liquid. And then the red one you can use to make these therapeutic foods. And I know you have a chocolate pudding recipe on your website, Caitlin, grassfedgirl.com.
Mm-hmm.
And that has gelatin and dark chocolate and coconut milk. And then there's another one on empoweredsustenance.com. I really like her website. She has a pumpkin pudding recipe and a pumpkin mousse recipe. And the Food Lover's Primal Palette just released a gummy candy recipe today. I guess I can't call it really candy, but it looks really good. It's a gummy snack, basically, that's made with berries, lemon juice, and unflavored gelatin. So there's lots of cool ways that you can sneak in your gelatin, and especially if you're not doing a lot of bone broth or you aren't making bone broth or you don't like it, gelatin offers a lot of the same benefits. So I'm just singing the praises of gelatin.
So I'm sure our listeners are wondering, Mary, what do we eat? What did we eat today? I don't care what you ate today.
Well, besides gelatin, my day was not that exciting. I had organic chicken sausage with avocado for breakfast, and then I had half an apple with almond butter and green tea. And then I have all the stuff to make a salad for lunch. So I'm actually down in Santa Cruz this week. I've been working from here all week, and it's really beautiful and warm and sunny today. So warm weather makes me want salad. So that's my day. But this weekend, I'm going to make these gelatin recipes. I think I'm going to make the pumpkin pudding one, and I definitely want to try that gummy snacks recipe that the Food Lover's Primal Palette. They have a lot of good recipes on their site, too. So I'm going to do some gelatin baking this weekend. What about you?
For breakfast, I had some leftover chicken that I had cooked. Oh, I know what I did. I saved all the giblets and the insides of the chicken, and I ate. So then I had a whole meal out of that. So I had two packages of giblets that were the liver and the neck and the heart and all that. And then I just put salt and pepper and garlic powder, and then I just cooked it in the oven for a few minutes and then just ate that. So that's a really good way to get all your vitamins and minerals in your, you know, eating meat on the bone is another way to get those substances that heal your joints.
And people always throw away the giblets too.
You mean most people do?
Yeah, but those are the organ meats and the mineral parts of the chicken too.
The whole, and then I put them, and I put the leftover neck bones into my everlasting crock pot of broth.
Nice.
For ends. And then for lunch, I have a leftover whole fish that we cooked yesterday that has all the bones in it, and I have some homemade mayonnaise that my husband made. So I'm going to put that on the fish and eat that for lunch too. So
cool. Yeah, you guys are always making gourmet stuff over at your house.
Yeah. Well, to have a chef in the kitchen.
Yeah, I'll bet. So I want to talk about this study. I mean, getting questions about it just surfaced yesterday. And the headline is Processed Meat, an Early Death Link. So it sounds very ominous, doesn't it? But the basic premise here is that sausage, ham, bacon, and other processed meats appear to increase the risk of dying young, a study of 500,000 people across Europe suggests. And if you also remember, you know, I think it was a year or two ago when the red meat linked to early death study came out, and everybody freaked out about that. But the important thing to note in these studies, and what kind of irks me, is that you don't know the lifestyle factors of the study participants. So in this study, it actually says that the study showed that people who ate a lot of processed meat were also more likely to smoke, be obese, and have other behaviors known to damage health. So there's that already. Apparently the subjects that they studied, you know, also had these unhealthy lifestyle factors. And the researchers also said that the people in the study were found to eat less fruit and vegetables, and that may have had an impact on the results. So that's
the other thing was you said, I mean, that they asked the participants to remember what they ate. I mean, we just talked about what we ate today, and I barely remembered what I had for breakfast, and that was hours ago. So if you're asking me what I ate a month ago or 6 weeks ago, I have no idea, and that's what this study was using. So you always want to use your critical thinking skills when you see these kind of headlines.
Yeah, exactly. And with the red meat study, too, there's no quality control. I mean, the participants could have been eating McDonald's every day. And, you know, of course, if you – in this study, there are people who – among the subjects, you know, were smokers or, you know, we don't know the age of the participants. So you're exactly right. And it's a correlation doesn't equal causation type issue too. So, you know, these are people that didn't have a plant-based diet, you know, they weren't working out. And of course there are some issues with processed meat. I mean, there are poor quality processed meats like Oscar Mayer bologna, for instance, and, you know, there's certain chemicals used in the processing that obviously aren't health promoting, but
there's a lot of MSG type ingredients that are used in processed meats, and there's a lot of fillers like corn and soy and wheat that are also used, I mean, in sausages and things. And another thing that's interesting is that I learned from reading that the Calton's book, the grocery store guide, Rich Food, Poor Food, is that the nitrates, I mean, you know, people argue about those so they're blue in the face, but they actually oppose nitrates for a different reason, is that they have more heavy metals that are allowed in the processing. So that's really the reason they don't like nitrates, nitrites.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, as with anything else, if you're buying factory farmed, mass produced, you know, processed meat made with chemicals, or if you're getting it from, say, fatted calf, or you're getting it from a good source where they're not adding any chemicals, you know, there's obviously a difference in the processing methods too. So you're exactly right. I mean, you need to use your critical thinking skills when you're coming across studies like this.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anyone in you know, our, you know, holistic health movement or paleo movement or whatever circle you're talking about, but I don't think anyone's saying, oh, yeah, processed meat's the greatest thing in the world for you. I think what everyone is saying is, you know, get the very best meat you can afford and, you know, mix it in with a lot of healthy greens and nice fats, and then that will have a good impact on health. But nobody's saying, oh, eat, you know, spam all day. I don't think that's what anybody is promoting. So,
yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, the bottom line here is that a plant-based diet, you know, with a spectrum of different vegetables, and then you're exactly right, the best quality meat you can buy, organic proteins, that's what's key, the balance of everything.
I mean, yeah, my entire website is called Grass-Fed Girl for a reason, you know. The benefits of grass-fed beef just can't be, or goat, lamb, you know, grass-fed ruminants that are 100% grass-fed are, you know, have a totally different ratio of inflammatory, you know, they're not inflammatory, so they have a good ratio of omega-3 to 6, and we talked about that a little bit last week, but, you know, there's a reason why we promote these types of animals. You know, you can't get health from a sick animal, as Phil Salton or says, so.
Yeah, good point. Okay, so moving on, we have an announcement to make about our workshop coming up, and then we're going to address some questions. So starting next Wednesday, March 13th, Caitlin and I are hosting a virtual workshop, and we did one back in January, Jumpstart Mind-Body Makeover Workshop. And this one is for spring, so it's for everybody who wants to get ready for spring, maybe lose some weight, gain some energy, break through sugar cravings. But the first one that we did was really great, so we've decided to run it on a regular basis. But it's a 21-day workshop, 3 weeks, and it's a teleseminar, and this one's going to be a webinar, so we'll actually have PowerPoint slides that you can follow along with. But you will get a manual that gives you all of the information that we're going to cover, and a detail for the plan that we're going to give you for the 21 days. There are three classes, three webinars, and you get support from us in between each class, and we're going to have a forum set up for addressing questions, and we're going to share recipes, tips, talk about fun wellness topics, but it's a really great way to kick off any kind of lifestyle change. And being a holistic class, we are not only talking about diet, but we're also talking about exercise, and we're talking about sleep and emotional wellness, as well as physical wellness. So $97, and Wednesday evenings in March, 6 p.m. our time, which is Pacific time, 8 p.m. Central time, and 9 p.m. for those on the East Coast. So you can find...
We're going to have a forum, and there's a lot of support from other people in the forum, and you get a lot of good recipes and shopping lists.
Yeah, exactly. And what's so fun about it, too, with the forum is that with this being a workshop, you know, it's good to get support from your other participants, and people write in with some really great questions, and we get really good discussions going on interesting topics. So it's a really cool class.
We had a lot of people say they lost weight for the first time in years, and were fitting into clothes they hadn't worn, and it was a really positive thing for the last group.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not just eat less, exercise more. That's not what we're telling you. We're actually having you include foods that promote fat burning and remove foods that could be potentially blocking your weight loss efforts. So there is a plan that we have you follow that is pretty effective. So look up information on how to join on our website. Again, mine's MaryVanceNC, like nutritionconsultant.com, and Caitlin is grassfedgirl.com. And then you can connect with us on Facebook, too. And Caitlin's at grassfedgirl on Facebook, and I'm Mary Vance, nutrition consultant on Facebook. So any other announcements that we have, Caitlin, before we address our questions for the week?
Well, you can always just go to our blogs. I've just written an article about, Mary said, a lot of gelatin. I got a Coke pumpkin recipe. I also put a coffee cake that was egg-free up, made with chia seeds, which, you know, have good and bad properties. But, you know, if you can't have eggs, then it's something you could try every once in a while. So that was, got a lot of traffic for the chia blueberry bread, and then I'm going to be posting a Jell-O recipe that I made yesterday this weekend. What's new on your blog, Mary?
Nice. I'm actually working on a post right now. The last one I put up was top 5 ways to get in gear for spring, and then there's information about our workshop to help you. And then I'm working on a post on IBS. I've gotten a lot of it just seems like I'm getting more and more inflammatory intestinal issues and questions about that. So I'm working on a post on that. And that's what will be coming down the pipe next week. But I'm curious to try your egg-free recipes because we're going to discuss eggs now that we're moving into questions. But I have a lot of clients, like I mentioned earlier, that have, you know, sensitivities to eggs. Or if you're on an autoimmune plan, eggs can be provocative for autoimmune disease. So some people have a hard time finding things to eat for breakfast or have a hard time figuring out what to substitute for eggs and recipes. So it's good to know that there are options out there. So
sounds great.
Without further ado, we will move into our questions. So the first one comes in from Jenny, and she says, how do I know if I'm sensitive to eggs? I eat them all the time, and I feel okay, but how would I know if they are affecting me? I have Hashimoto's, but I have not been disciplined enough to do an autoimmune protocol. Do you think that would be a good idea? So for those of you who aren't aware, Hashimoto's is autoimmune thyroid disease, so it's hypothyroidism. And so typically with an autoimmune protocol, we always have people remove foods that they could be potentially allergic to because with any autoimmune issue, there's always some sort of gut problem going on because the majority of your immune system is in your gut, and it means your immune system is overreactive. So typically that's where we think a lot of autoimmune disease originates, is from either an infection in the gut or some sort of multiple food allergy issue. And interestingly, there's a bacteria called Yersinia that is associated with autoimmune disease and especially Crohn's, and it's in the Enterobacter family. And you find a lot of that with Hashimoto's. And you can do a GI panel and test for it. Caitlin and I both offer those in our practice, and then you can kill it off. But typically that would be, you know, an underlying cause of autoimmune because it causes a lot of inflammation. But I'm getting off topic here. So how do I know if I'm sensitive to eggs? The easiest way is just to do an egg elimination challenge. So I have people remove them from their diet for, you know, 2 weeks and then add it back in and see if you react to it. So over that time, you know, you can get used to, if you eat the same foods over and over, you know, they could be causing reactions, but you're not aware of them. You just think that, you know, they're unrelated things. Like it could be something as subtle as sinus issues that are chronic, or even insomnia or just occasional bloating or joint pain. Any of those can be tied to food allergies. So
I did an egg elimination for 1 month just to see if it affected me.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that I had a lot of neck and shoulder tension that was immediately resolved.
Wow, cool.
Getting rid of eggs. And that was really, that was the main thing I noticed.
Yeah, that's really telling, huh?
Yeah.
And
as soon as I started eating them, of course, it came back.
Well, the thing with eggs, too, is people don't suspect eggs as being problematic, you know, because we hear so many good benefits. But actually, it's more the white than the yolk that people react to, because if you think about it, the white is designed to protect the yolk. And so there are a lot of what we call anti-nutrients present in the white. And that's what...
It's kind of like the seed of the egg, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, evolutionarily speaking, the white is designed to have these anti-nutrients to protect the yolk from, you know, predators, especially since it has a thin shell. So, a lot of people, I often see egg allergies associated with, like, joint pain, and like you mentioned, too. Just basically, you know, any kind of nagging issues that sort of go on chronically. I would do an egg elimination for a period of time and add it back in. You could also do food allergy testing if you really want to know. I do finger prick food allergy tests in my practice. We'll talk about autoimmune on future podcasts, but if you do have autoimmune issues, then I recommend doing a 30-day autoimmune protocol and remove nuts, anything in the nightshade family, gluten, obviously, dairy, and eggs, and ideally grains. And you're probably thinking, well, what am I going to eat? There are plenty of options if you're sticking to just good fats, protein, and vegetables. But we'll talk more about autoimmune.
Nuts and seeds, right?
Yeah, exactly, because those can create a lot of problems too.
Yeah, I think you have to be in a space, you don't have any big trips coming up or anything, but it's a good thing to do when you have some downtime at home to just kind of regroup. And it can also be a time when it's very restorative to, clean up your diet for a period of time and just see how it makes you feel.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so
the next question, I didn't get the name, but if you're out there, thank you so much for asking. Is there anything else you can recommend for healing leaky gut other than glutamine? It makes me break out. I drink bone broth every day, but I'm sure that's not enough. I haven't tried it, but I've heard licorice, marshmallow, and slippery elm can be constipating. Thanks. And there's a second part of the question, which I'll get to in a second, is about they've tried cod liver oil, but every time they take it, they end up getting chapped lips. So I'll do that one next. But the healing leaky gut is, the biggest thing is starting with an elimination diet. That's why, diets like the GAPS diet or paleo diet or SCD diet, that's why those are helpful for a lot of people, is because they remove grains, gluten. If you ask us a question, make sure and kind of give us some background on your diet, because that'll really help us, to not be so repetitive. So give us a little background on what you've been doing. But anyway, so first thing's elimination diet, getting rid of grains, vegetable oils, sugar, most sugar. And, another thing you can do is sneak in more gelatin, like we were just talking about, put it in. I've even heard of people putting gelatin in their coffee, for example. So, you can add it to soups and stews and make little treats out of it. And there's you know, easy ways to get more gelatin in, and that will have a gut healing impact. Another thing is aloe vera. A lot of people have found that aloe vera is very healing for the gut lining. So, you know, you can take that in pills. There's also some liquid drinks, or just be careful about other additives in the drinks. You know, some of them might have sugar or something else. And it, you know, healing leaky gut is really about figuring out what the trigger is. So, like Mary said, you may have a bacteria or a pathogen that's continuing to cause. You know, if you have a parasite or a gut infection like Blastocystis hominis or Cryptosporidium, no matter how much bone broth you drink, you're never going to get rid of that. So, you know, if you have the means, you can get tested for those kinds of things through, you know, a practitioner. And what do you, and about the constipation, I mean, I've had some first-hand experience with L-glutamine not really agreeing with me. Of course, yeah, the L-glutamine can be constipating for some people. The licorice, I've taken a lot for adrenal fatigue, and that doesn't seem to cause any problems. Marshmallow and slippery elm, what do you think about those to be constipating, Mary?
Well, my blanket answer for things like that is that, I mean, everything affects everyone differently. And there are things we know that, you know, have the tendency to cause issues in people. But, I mean, I have never had an experience with those particular herbs being constipating at all for anyone that I worked with. But that's not to say that it, you know, if your system doesn't tolerate it well, it could cause any kind of reaction. But typically, licorice, marshmallow, and slippery elm are very what we call demulcent herbs. So they really soothe and heal and reduce inflammation. But if they have that effect on you, obviously, don't use them.
Yeah, and I wanted to go back to the thing about the fermented cod liver oil making people, making her lips chapped, or this person. I read about that a little bit, and it seems like one of my friends works at Pharmaca over in Berkeley, and she was telling me how, you know, if your body really has a bad reaction to something, or, you know, it might just be that you don't need it. And I read, and I was, when I was researching this question, I found that that was kind of resonated with a lot of other people in about this, that maybe you just had enough of whatever the cod liver oil is giving you. I mean, that's very rare. Most people really need what's in cod liver oil, but that may be the case with this person. Maybe it's vitamin, maybe they have enough vitamin A. Another thing it could be is a vitamin B, B vitamin deficiency. A lot of people have that. Could be kind of related to herpes. They maybe want to try some lysine tablets every day. You know, vitamin C, maybe more vitamin C rich foods in your diet, broccoli, cauliflower, kale, Swiss chard, some low glycemic fruits, blueberries, things like that have a lot of vitamin C. And, you know, you might just want to go with the actual foods. You know, some people do a lot better with eating real liver and real wild fish than they do with supplements. So, and some other people found that I was researching that dairy was a culprit. So you may, I don't know how much dairy you're eating, but that may be someplace you want to try to get rid of that and see if it helps. With the chocolate.
Yeah, good point. I like what you said about, because that's true. I mean, I have a lot of clients too that come to me hearing whatever the latest fad is good, and they take a bunch of it, and more is not necessarily better either. So, you know, all you need is basically one teaspoon of cod liver oil a day. So if you're chugging it down, then it could create a reaction for sure. Okay.
So then you want to go on to the next one about...
Yeah.
some hormones, huh?
Okay, so she says, Mary, hi. I've been trying to follow a paleo diet, but I keep feeling worse and worse. It turns out I've got histamine intolerance, and everything I've been putting in my mouth is wrong. I don't do well on vegetarian diets, grains, beans, or any of that, so I don't know what to eat. Also, I'm suspecting that my hormones are definitely a player here, and even a histamine intolerance is also interfering with my bioidentical hormone replacement therapy. Even with progesterone, I became very estrogen dominant and had to stop it all. Now I feel completely crummy and have gained 8 pounds in as many weeks on top of the 10 that I've already gained during perimenopause. I'm wondering if I'll ever feel good again. I'm kind of lost about what to do at this point. So, a couple of things going on here that I suspect. So the histamine intolerance, that's interesting. I've had a couple of new clients that have histamine intolerance, and it means that they typically, you know, all foods to a certain extent have some histamines in them, but I think the higher histamine foods are like smoked meats and even bone broth, bones, things like that, certain vegetables. But so the issue here that I'm suspecting is, you know, this woman mentions that she is in perimenopause, and so she's doing bioidentical hormone replacement. And so here's the thing. If you are not addressing kind of the underlying cause of what's causing a hormone imbalance or making you feel poorly as you're transitioning into menopause, then, you know, if you're adding stuff on top of it, then the whole program is going to crash you. And I think that's what's happening here. So when I say identifying the underlying cause, I would take a step back from everything and sort of see what your adrenals are doing. Because if you're stressed out heading into menopause, you know, your adrenals and your female hormones, or your ovaries, I should say, your adrenals and your ovaries both are in charge of producing female hormones in the body. So when your ovaries kind of stop working and shut down during menopause, then your adrenals kind of have to take over to keep everything balanced as you move through the transition. So if your adrenals are exhausted, you're going to really kind of feel crappy and crash. And that can cause weight gain and some of these other issues. So I would recommend doing adrenal hormone saliva testing, if you can find that in your area or work with a practitioner to do that. Then you can find out, you know, what your adrenals are doing, what your cortisol levels are doing, and sort of, you know, do some adrenal support work. Also, if you don't respond well to bioidentical hormone replacement, there's a link that, you know, there could be some liver congestion. So, you know, supporting the liver, especially during perimenopause, is critical too, because your liver is in charge of metabolizing hormones to a certain extent. So liver support is really important there. And with the histamine intolerance and, you know, other food that you're not tolerating and you're confused about what to eat, I would also, you know, see if there's any sort of gut issue going on, if there's a leaky gut issue, if there's a, you know, gut infection, like a bacterial overgrowth or a parasite. So I would really recommend working with someone to do adrenal testing and possibly some digestive assessment, you know, to see if there's any digestive issue that's going on, as I mentioned, like a parasite or bacteria. And in terms of what to eat, I would really just recommend doing like a really sort of hypoallergenic basic autoimmune program, like we talked about earlier, just removing all the possible foods that can be that can cause reactions, like gluten, dairy, soy, eggs, nuts. Just stick to protein and vegetables and do some detox support. Like you could even try using Clearvite from Apex Energetics. I really like that. It's a protein powder, and a lot of people don't like that because it's processed to a certain extent. But it's basically just rice protein, and it has a lot of detox supportive nutrients in it, so it'll really help to give you good liver support. So I would start there, do kind of an autoimmune program, and then kind of see what's going on, you know, try to identify some of the underlying causes for what's causing the symptoms.
Yeah. Isn't it true, Mary, that some of the hormones can turn into other hormones? I recently got my mom has been going for all this hormone replacement, taking sublingual progesterone before bed, Mm-hmm. And we tested her adrenals, and she had the nighttime cortisol spike. And I talked to the doctor at the lab, and you know, they thought that the nighttime cortisol spike was because she was overdosing on progesterone.
That's really interesting, actually, because that's the way the metabolic pathways for hormones work in the body. So if you're, for instance, not giving your body the raw materials to make cortisol, your body can use progesterone to make cortisol. So if you're low cortisol...
And she has a... And then we did an adrenal test, and she was... Well, I mean, obviously, and we did... She has, you know, severe... low cortisol in the morning.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, that's what's important about doing all this bioidentical hormone replacement is you really shouldn't take hormones like that in isolation. You know, you kind of have to address the whole picture. I mean, it's just like what we do in holistic nutrition or integrative medicine is have everybody look at the whole picture, what's going on, and kind of bringing the body back into balance by looking at all of the factors affecting one issue. So, you know, if you just add in wild yam or progesterone and you're not looking at what your adrenals are doing or the other parts of your hormonal system, because the endocrine system is so complicated. I mean, all these parts are working together, and if you alter one part and don't address it all as a whole, then it can cause other imbalances. So, you know, that's obviously why it helps to work with someone, because they can help you navigate through all the information.
Yes. So I'm sure we could talk about that all day, but we'll go on to the next question. Hi. I've misplaced the name again, but oh well, we'll get better at that. Anna. Hi. Caitlin, my gums have been looking a wee bit molted for about a month now. I went to the dentist and everything checked out, so I thought it may be a vitamin deficiency. I began taking vitamin C, D3, coenzyme Q10 about 2 weeks or so ago. Is there anything else I can do to get them looking healthy again? Thanks so much. Well, I'm not sure modeled, M-O-D-L-E-D. I don't know if this person's from another country or what. I'm not really familiar with that word, but I guess it's just not looking healthy is what I'm taking it to mean. But, you know, I think the health of the mouth is an overall, you know, I think the person's right. It is maybe a vitamin and mineral deficiency. And, you know, of course, the vitamin A and D, you know, those are synergistic fat-soluble vitamins that need to be taken with food to be absorbed. And those, that could be a great place to start, you know, the cod liver oil, because they're in the right combination. I mean, they're not isolated. Sometimes if we take a whole bunch of D by itself, I mean, you may need that in addition, but without the A, you're not going to necessarily get the benefits. So I was reading this John Sorrentino is a kind of a paleo dentist in the blogosphere, and he really has a theory about that tooth decay is caused by excess sugars and grains, and so that's a pretty good thing to remove for a while to get your, I mean, I think, you know, forever, but if you want to do it for a while and see if it helps. There's a book from Remy Nagel called Cure Tooth Decay Naturally, and you know, it has tons of examples of people getting rid of in cavities with cod liver oil. So, you know, tons of, you can read Weston A. Price's work on that. I was seeing a bunch of that last night.
And coconut oil, too. I know it's great for tooth decay.
Okay. And then, you know, you want to get your gut bacteria in a good, you know, a lot of people have dysbiosis, and that means that you have an imbalance of the healthy bacteria, and you know, you're not going to be absorbing things in the right way either if you have dysbiosis. So you want to get more and probiotics or fermented foods and or fermented foods, both probably. You know, again, remove the source of the inflammation that's going to keep you from absorbing. And the other thing is a lot of vitamin K, you know, that's in the cod liver oil as well, but that really helps to the bone matrix and the teeth and the dentin laying down a good strong cross work mesh. And so vitamin K is really important for that, and that's in leafy greens. There's two different types of vitamin K, but to cover all your bases, you want to get it from some plant sources and animal and plant sources. And some people believe that we have to supplement with that because we're not going to get enough just from plant and animal. So, I mean, really looking at the diet and making sure you're absorbing will help a lot with getting your gums. You know, it's not so much, you know, what we're taught in the media is just brush your teeth with lots of fluoride and, you know, floss. I think flossing can help. I mean, it always makes me feel better. And baking soda. And I think as you get older, you start to have, like, a lot of spaces in your teeth and stuff. And you really, not flossing is not really an option because it doesn't feel so good to not floss. But I know some people don't think it really helps anything, but I think it's just as far as the comfort level, it helps. But I use baking soda just to brush my teeth. I've got a recipe for coconut oil and toothpaste with baking soda with a little peppermint oil. If that's all you do, just mix it up and you've got your own homemade toothpaste. So that's a great thing. And there's also oil pulling. A lot of people, that could really help the gums because it kind of, you just put a tablespoon of oil, of coconut oil or olive oil in your mouth and swish it around for a minute or so. And then don't swallow it. You want to spit it out. And you could do that every day or twice a day. And that would probably really improve. I've heard a lot of people think that that really helps. You get rid of toxins. Helps fatten off bacteria. So that's something else you could try.
Yeah, I was going to suggest, I just suggested oil pulling to a client of mine the other day who has some dental issues going on, but mottled means, you know, your gums are looking splotchy, and that, I haven't really ever come across that, I don't think, but all your suggestions are good. I would definitely try the oil pulling. At first, I was sort of dubious about oil pulling, but I've done a lot of research on it. And I can't really give you a scientific explanation for why it works, but anecdotally, yeah. I've seen a lot of people who have reported improvements with it. So, you know, hey, if it works, it works.
And I mean, another thing, of course, you can always go get your metal fillings out. That might help too. I got mine out a few years ago, and you know, you got to be careful and do it with a biological dentist. I have a great dentist here, Svetlana Yesin. Worked with a lot of lessening of price principles and called integrative dentistry. And she's a big proponent of, you know, this kind of way of life. So it's nice to have somebody who understands. But I think it is a good step to get those out in a proper way. And, you know, not maybe all at once, but, you know, as you feel able and can afford it and everything. So, and really, I tell my clients, I mean, a lot of them are, you know, middle age or whatever. I mean, they have good insurance and stuff, and they pay, like, 80%. So, it's like, get them out. Like, why are, you know, I mean, if you have a serious chronic health issue, you might want to, you know, be more careful, but some people are just not doing it out of, I don't know, just laziness. So, I mean, you if you can't throw it in the trash, why do you want it in next to your brain, you know?
That's a good point. Yeah, and you're exactly right about I've seen people really crash if they get their fillings out all at once because the mercury can really, I mean, it's a huge toxin. It's a neurotoxin, and it can really crash your system. So be really careful about that, too. Scary stuff.
Yeah, I mean, you would want to go to a dentist who could advise you about some things to do afterwards and to maybe just do one at a time or something like that.
Yeah, we should talk more about that.
We could always bring her on the show, too.
Yeah, totally. Okay, so moving on, I'm going to cover the eczema portion of the podcast today because I got a bunch of questions on eczema. And so here is, I mean, the answer is kind of basically apply to both, but one of them is a baby, so I'll do that one first. So Annette writes, Mary, my 13-month-old has eczema on her trunk, arms, and legs. I guess I noticed dry patches on her stomach around 12 months. I would like to heal her from the inside out, but I'm afraid the doctors will only give me a bunch of steroids. I'm thinking of switching to almond milk for a couple of weeks to see if cow's milk is a problem, and I'm trying to avoid wheat as well. I'm putting coconut oil on her a few times a day. Any other suggestions? So Annette doesn't mention if she is still breastfeeding, but the short answer is that, you know, eczema does typically crop up in childhood, and it's considered to be an autoimmune issue. So there's typically always underlying food allergies or some underlying infection going on. So, you know, I'm not sure if you are breastfeeding, in that case, you would personally want to avoid allergens, which are cow's milk, eggs, peanuts, soy, wheat, and refined sugar. And then in terms of what you're feeding your baby, you know, stick to, at that age, you can do bone broth and just mashed veggies and introduce proteins. I really like the Nourishing Our Children website, which is connected with Weston A. Price. They have a lot of really good information on, you know, feeding kids a traditional diet. Also, you'd really want to get some probiotic foods into her and yourself. Like BioCult is good for babies. You'd also might, you know, you could probably look into the GAPS diet, gut and psychology syndrome. You know, there's a lot of information out there about that. You know, just Google GAPS diet and you'll hit the website, but you would really want to focus on, you know, the fact that there could be some food allergies going on here and possibly doing some digestive healing work. So, you know, the bone broth is really good for that. You know, interestingly, speaking of Weston A. Price, you know, Thomas Cowan, who's a physician here, he's a holistic physician here in San Francisco, he gives a good recommendation on the Weston A. Price website for a cream that you can use. And the website is drkangformulas.com. So it's drkangformulas.com. So poke around the website, and the formula is number 49. You'll find it on there. He's a, I guess Dr. Kang is a Chinese medicine doctor. But apparently, you know, I did some research on this stuff, and I have clients that have eczema that I recommended this formula to them, and they say it is, like, miraculous for really reducing a lot of the inflammation that can be caused, that eczema can cause, and a lot of the itching, too. So I would say, you know, do that, and, you know, you could even do some food allergy testing. You know, just work with a good holistic physician to find out, you know, if there are underlying food allergies or what else could be going on, and then really work to rebalance gut flora. And, you know, holisticsquid.com has a really good book, The Eczema Cure. If you go to her website, she's an acupuncturist that specializes in fertility down in Los Angeles. She's got some good information on her site. There's a book you can download for more. But that is the short answer for babies. Here's the next question from Marissa regarding eczema. She says, Hi, Mary, I'm about 25 years old, and I've been suffering with severe eczema for 6 years. I'm on several allergy medications and allergy shots, but lately it's been worse than ever to the point where I can't sleep at night because it itches so much. I'm planning on starting a 30-day elimination diet this week and also planning on taking the supplements you suggested. And she's probably referring to an article I wrote on eczema that was published a while back. I'm definitely going to eliminate gluten, dairy, eggs, nuts, soy, grains, alcohol, sugar, and caffeine. Do you also suggest eliminating legumes and nightshades? Also, what about ibuprofen and Tylenol? I read somewhere that those things can cause internal inflammation. I want to do this right, but I don't want to eliminate things I don't need to, since I know this will already be a challenge. Also, just so I'm clear, goat's milk and sheep's milk products are okay, right? Thank you for any help that you can give. Many thanks. Okay. So you're definitely on the right track with, you know, doing this 30-day basically autoimmune protocol, you know, eliminating the dairy, eggs, gluten, nuts, soy, corn, grains, and alcohol. So that's good. You know, that gets the major allergens out of your diet so that your immune system can kind of calm down. And as I said earlier, you know, with eczema and autoimmune, eczema especially is tied to a lot of hidden food allergies. So if you don't experience any result by eliminating those foods, you probably want to do food allergy testing, because it could be something totally random, like mustard greens or something that you wouldn't suspect. So legumes and nightshades definitely. That's tomatoes, potatoes, eggplant. They contain a high level of what we call anti-nutrients. You know, we talked about that earlier with eggs that can create allergic reactions in some people and can cause joint pain too. Legumes, again, they contain lectins, so a lot of people react to those and that can cause inflammation, so that's a good idea. You know, just focus on eating good fats, avocado, olive oil, coconut oil, no butter for the time being until you determine if you react to dairy. And just focus on protein and veggies, and do, I would supplement definitely with fatty acids. You know, fermented cauliflower oil is great because the vitamin A is great for skin health, and vitamin D is excellent for your immune system. And try that Dr. King formula, and if you guys are experimenting with this, then report back and let me know how it works, because I've also got, as I mentioned, a couple clients who are going to try it too. And, you know, obviously, the health of your skin, you know, like we talked about earlier, the health of your skin is so tied to the health of your gut, because if you think about it, you know, your skin is this permeable layer that covers you to keep toxins and bacteria out, just like your gut has a layer on it to keep everything in. And so they both, you know, have the same sort of function. So, you know, there's some evidence that eczema is kind of like leaky skin, essentially. Like there's some genetic issue in the skin where it's not able to keep toxins out fully. So it's extra permeable, and that's when you get these itchy rashes. So, I mean, obviously you want to work to heal the inside out first. So, you know, the first step is getting rid of all these foods. And then, you know, the second step would be to do the gut healing work, you know, see if there's any gut infection going on, like do the stool test to see if there's bacteria or parasite, then do the leaky gut repair, you know, do gelatin like we've talked about, bone broth, and you can do some leaky gut repair products, you know, glutamine.
Another thing, Mary, is to think about, you know, also toxins in your home and products you're putting on your skin. I mean, I know it's mostly coming from the inside, but it can exacerbate, you know, an already and I mean, it affects the linings of your gut, lungs, and brain, what you're breathing in, too. So, I mean, if you're putting all kinds of fragrance lotions and shampoos and all these things that can exacerbate the situation, would you agree?
Yeah, I mean, that's a big thing, too. That, you know, eczema can really be triggered by environmental allergens and, you know, anything from pet dander to toxins in your home. And we talked last podcast about making your own cleaning products, which is pretty easy, and just making sure you're using hypoallergenic, even, you know, laundry detergent, and that you're, you know, reading all the ingredients in your body care products or just making your own.
Yeah,
but
simplify things. And one other thing, I have a friend who recovered from severe eczema, and she had even burning feet. I mean, it sounded just miserable. And you may, I'm sure she's written about it. Her website's called PavlikaFamily.com. She had an aluminum allergy for years. And as soon as she figured that out, it went away. So, I mean, and of course she took steps to get rid of all the aluminum. But that's another thing to think about.
Yeah, yeah, and she asks to goats and sheep's milk. So the issue with that is I would say eliminate those for now, too. In goat and sheep proteins, the protein is shaped differently than cow, so it can be easier for a lot of people to digest goat and sheep dairy. But I would eliminate those, and then after the 30 days, you can start adding some of the stuff back in to see if you react to it. And, you know, if you want to take all the guesswork out of this, like I said, you could do some food allergy testing just to see. But better to be safe than sorry. So, you know, it's only a month. You can handle it for a month and just be super strict in the beginning. And I think, you know, once you start to see results, it'll really keep you motivated.
And, I mean, the other thing, whenever you're doing an elimination diet, you want to focus on what you can have. I mean, I think just listening to, I can't have this, I can't have that. I mean, it makes me feel depressed just thinking about it. So, you know, it's better to just, like, I give people shopping lists, and I say, you know, all these foods are ones you can have.
Yeah.
If you're obsessing about, I can't have this, I can't have that, I mean, you're going to be miserable. So, you know, you want to get creative and, you know, come from a possibility thinking about, oh, I can have all this stuff. And I think you're going to have a better outlook and better results if you focus on a list of what of all the things you can. You know, you can get really creative if you focus on, oh, I can have, you know, all different meats and coconut and all these things. So, you know, just don't focus on the can'ts.
Yeah, that's a really good point, actually. All right.
Can't even remember all the things you said I can't have.
Yeah. No, that is really important. It's all about the mindset. And there's some, you get super creative with a lot of these websites to, you know, you can bake with virtually, you know, no starch, no sugar, no grains, no dairy, no eggs. I like the Real Sustenance website for that, too. Okay, we're over an hour here, so we got to wrap things up. So...
one more thing. We want to end each week now with a motivational quote to keep you excited. Sometimes, you know, regaining your health can be challenging, and some days you just want to give up. So, you know, this week we're going to use a quote from Zig Ziglar. So he said, "Motivation is like a bath. We need it daily." So, you know, I think that's really good. Sometimes my clients, they think you can just do something once and you're committed, but that's not how it works. I mean, every day, I know Mary does this too. We read and we immerse ourselves in positive, you know, not just positive thinking. I mean, that's important too, but, you know, positive reinforcement. So blogs or podcasts, or, you know, being around positive people. Those are all things you need to do every day to keep yourself motivated, to stay focused on healing yourself. And what do you think, Mary?
Yeah, I love what you're saying, for sure. I mean, that's part of this whole process is, you know, having someone help keep you motivated, and that's part of what we do through coaching is, you know, people know how to what they're supposed to do, but it's just keeping them motivated to do the work. And we all have backslides. I mean, that's part of the process too. But
yeah, I mean, and, you know, birds of a feather flock together. I mean, I just this past weekend I had a potluck at my house, and some of my nutritionist friends came over, and it was really great because one of the girls said, "Oh, it's so nice to be around you girls, because you're all positive about this kind of stuff. And when I usually hang out with my, you know, my work colleagues, everyone's drowning themselves in a, you know, bottle of wine and complaining about how they hit their lives." So, you know, you have to think about, you know, the kind of influences you have in your life, and you think about where you want to go, and stick with people who are going to push, help you get there.
Yeah, that's a perfect note to end on. So, thanks everyone for listening.
And please leave us a review on iTunes. Let us know.